Before we get into some poems, I wanted to say a couple things. I am an editor, and there's something sort of important about literature and the arts, which I'm speaking to the choir maybe, but that maybe we forget sometimes, which is that there's something radical about it. And I believe that the radical thing about literature is that it humanizes us and teaches us sincere empathy, something we don't want to lose in our world. And as an editor, as a poet, as someone who's been involved in literature in the United States for a few short years now, I'll also say that I've never seen something quite as dynamic as narrative. It's easy to go online and look at the magazine or get the print issue and enjoy it and not realize that they are only 9.5 years old. If narrative was a human, that would mean that they had only been wiping for a few years. And if you're a child, had only been wiping for a few years, yet somehow was so sophisticated, enlightened, ecstatic that they were driving cars, inventing things we can't even imagine, it would freak you out. Narrative is a worthwhile endeavor because it's an endeavor of the heart. And the first poem I wanted to read is dedicated to everybody at Narrative. And I'll just be reading for about an hour and a half. Chapter one. my aunt and uncle are here, so I'm not going to tell the joke about how I'm on acid right now. Byron loves me. My dead English professor sits at the foot of my bed crying. "What's the matter?" I ask. "Matthew," he says, "I will never understand Byron. My wife is married to another man. My daughter is in love with pop songs about sex and money, while Byron offers nothing but Seville and oranges. I can't tell if he loves me or not." My professor shrugs like all dead men shrug, stands up and walks out of my room like all men, dead or alive, slowly with his head bent to the task of leaving. Waking up in the morning, half-dressed for a dream about ballroom dancing, my coattails fluttering in long black strips behind me, top hat pulled down over my eyes and half-dressed for breakfast, my pajama bottoms covered in flickering hotel signs, I remember that I live alone. And because I live alone, I take the palm trees far too seriously, depend far too much on my books lined up like a third grade class preparing for recess, all wearing different coats, some pushing and pulling at their classmates. If you live alone with a smile thin as a paper cut, your dead English professor coming around every other night in tears, an empty mailbox and a neighbor that puts her cigarettes out in your begonia, you should not hang yourself. Tell the palm tree you love him. Light a candle and offer yourself up to the books. Haven't they saved your life once before? Reading Allen Ginsberg, the day your friend cut himself open, in the back seat of his car, the engine running while his mother was getting high off a plastic bag of paint thinner, a bluish ring around her mouth. You could have been in that car. You could have been like her. But you sat on the floor and pulled Lucille Clifton off the shelf instead. As if that were not enough to make you shiver while the angel of fate passed over you. Somewhere in New Jersey, you have Bruce Springsteen writing songs about you and wondering how you are. Thank you. Only an hour and 20 minutes left with me up here. Yeah, someone in that corner is awesome. These are some new poems. Super. I want to take the green curtains down and cut out a costume. A cape and tights. A thin mask like the Lone Ranger. Boots from the secondhand store and jump off a building. Feel how it is to fall and then swoop along with the traffic. On slow nights, I would just hover in the air two floors up outside your apartment window and watch you cook dinner. Sit with your tea and read. Your beautiful right hand turning the pages, your feet beneath a blanket. I know this might sound a little creepy, but if I could get bitten by a spider, I would cling to your ceiling all night. I would fly in on a silver web and save your life every time it came within a mile of danger. If you almost grabbed the handle of a hot pan, I would blast it with rays of ice from my eyes. If you got the wrong change, the right change would appear in the bottom of your purse. You wouldn't even see me in my handmade invisibility suit, which I think I can make out of tin foil and plastic wrap. Darling, I would battle all your high school indignities with my go back in time to high school indignity armor. I wear glasses already. All I need is a phone booth and a job at the paper. When I wasn't saving you or the planet or babies being held out of the windows of burning buildings, I would write flattering exposés about you and your friends. I have a basement in my house that's kind of like a cave, and I've been working on a very ancient kind of Chinese Oriental martial arts karate I ordered off of Amazon. It's a 4-DVD set and very good for muscles and ninja senses. I made a friend yesterday that'll be a great sidekick. Soon he'll be ready for his own costume, and I've already designed it out of hefty bags and red zip ties. I'm up all night checking your Facebook updates. It's going to be such a super day when I get to reveal myself to you. All my friends' deaths will finally come to an end. I'm putting on my yellow Sorrow Man outfit, which I made out of my old, dirty, yellow sheets. I'm getting ready to step outside. Look up with my hands on my hips and leap in a single bound, off the porch, and into the world. Wow. You guys have been drinking more than me. I'm just going to read a couple more poems. So I'm a poet up here reading poems. Readings are weird. It's weird, like people will get up here and be like, and the next poem. It's like, Okay. This next poem is an elegy. Yeah, so just be prepared. Elegy to a goldfish. Poor effing goldfishes. It's not part of the poem, I'm just saying. They have short lives. They're like minority whips in Congress. I mean, it's like sad. Elegy to a goldfish. I can't remember when my brother and I decided to kill you. Small fish with no school, bright and happy at the bottom, slipping through the gate of your fake castle. I think it was winter, a part of us aware of the death outside, the leaves being burned up and the squirrels starving inside of the oaks, the sky knocking its clouds into the ashtray of the city. And it might have been me who picked you up first, who chased you around the clean bowl of your life and brought you up into the suffocating elevator of ours. And I want to say it was my brother who threw you against the wall like a drunk husband. The glowworm inch of you sliding down the English garden of wallpaper. And that it was me who raised my leg like a dog. Me who brought my bare foot slamming down on your almost nothing ribs and felt you smear like a pimple. Now, that's something I get to have forever. That Halloween candy-sized rage. That cough drop of meanness. And your death only the beginning. The mushy orange autopsy reminded us of mandarins, navels, bloods, Persians, the sweet Valencia. And when our sister, who must have thought of you all day, came home to find the bowl empty, looked at us, my brother and me, I remember we started to laugh. And then it might have been me, though it could have been him, who thought to open the can of tangerines, who pulled one of the orange bodies out of the syrup and threw it at her. This new artificial you, chasing her around the house, screaming, "Eat him, eat him." But it was me who held her down on her bed, and him who forced her mouth open. And it was me who pushed the sticky fruit into her throat like a bloody foot into a sock. You had only been gone for 1 hour, and yet the sky outside turned black and red. The tree in the yard thrashed back and forth until its spinal cord broke. And my little sister, your one love, flashed white and pulsed like neon in a hospital, her eyes rolling back into the aquarium of her head for a moment. And in every country, countless deaths, but none as important as yours. Tiny Christ, machine of hope, martyr of girls and boys. So, okay, we have just enough time for two more poems. And then we're going to move on to some real writers. It's true. It's going to be great. We're in California, and this next poem was written in California. You can tell with all my titles, they're complicated. Elegy for a Goldfish was about the death of goldfish. Super was about being super. So if you have any questions later, you can ask me about the inner meaning of things. Palm Springs. Outside the hotel room's sliding glass door is a lemon tree, and each lemon a milky yellow light that's been lit for each milky-eyed day of depression. And each green leaf a different self, a different kind of process of rehabilitation of brain and brain matter, of the arrested heart, of vision. I keep seeing the end of me in the spaceship blue water of the swimming pool, a long fish made out of smoke hovering in the shallow end, being afraid like it always is, the fins shaking, the face not able to look at anyone in the eye, in the two eyes, my strange underwater self, banging its head against the drain, wanting its mother to walk out of Cathedral City in 1950 with a girl she's in love with but can't tell, wearing penny loafers and high water jeans. I want to not have to think about her all the time, have to think about her like an alien who's abducted me and touched me with the glowing end of a long green finger. So now I don't know if I'm the same as I was or forever changed by the touch. For some reason, my older brother's skull is bleaching beneath a big California sun in the Bermuda dunes. He's beginning to look like a part of an animal even more than when he was alive. The cabana of his body keeping his skull warm and wet for as long as it could, and he keeping his own body until there was nothing left for him to keep. Why does that sound like an orange being hit with a metal bat when I say his own body? His own body? How is that the sound of an orange? Right now, I'm lying on the hotel bed. The starch and bleach feel like sand rubbing against my legs. The engine of a Thunderbird is making the body of a Thunderbird go very fast through the hills. It sounds like the inner life of teenagers. In fact, it sounds like something my grandmother might hear right before she dies. Something like the sea, and then the rage of the human engine. I'm in Palm Springs listening to Sinatra fall out of the speakers that the hotel has hidden in fake boulders. I'm drinking martinis. The lemons keep sighing and have nothing to do with death, but everything to do with a kind of life that is light and beautiful, like the hair on the back of a girl's arm, or the stars washing through the palms, the moon rinsing everyone's feet. Okay, so this is the last poem, and I want to thank Narrative for having me here. For coming to San Francisco, it's awesome. I'm a hick from Portland, Oregon, and I did not wear a flannel today. I wore a shirt with a collar. Is Ashley here? Is she here? She over here? Okay. Great. Good. This is for Ashley. Someone who refuses to marry me. I don't know why. But this is for her. Getting it right. Your ankles make me want to party. Want to sit and beg and roll over under a pair of riding boots with your ankles hidden inside, sweating beneath the black tooled leather. They make me wish it was my birthday so I could blow out their candles, have them hung over my shoulders like two bags full of money, Your ankles are two monster truck engines, but smaller and lighter and sexier than a saucer with warm milk licking the outside edge. They make me want to sing, make me want to take them home and feed them pasta. I want to punish them for being bad and then hold them all night and say, I'm sorry, sugar, darling, it'll never happen again, not in a million years. Your thighs make me quiet, make me want to be hurled into the air like a cannonball and pulled down again like someone being pulled into a van. Your thighs are two boats burned out of redwood trees. I want to go sailing. Your thighs, the long breadth of them under the blue denim of your high-end jeans, could starve me to death, could make me cry and cry. Your ass is a shopping mall at Christmas. A holy place, a hill I fell in love with once when I was falling in love with hills. Your ass is a string quartet. The northern lights tucked tightly into bed between a high count of cotton sheets. Your back is the back of a river full of fish. I have my tackle and tackle box. You only have to say the word. Your back, a letter I've been writing for 15 years, a smooth stone, a moan someone makes when their hair is pulled. Your back like a warm tongue at rest, a tongue with a tab of acid on top. Your spine is an alphabet, a ladder of celestial proportions. When I place my fingers along it, there isn't an instrument in the world I'd rather be playing. It's a map of the world, a timeline. I'm navigating the north and south of it. Your armpits are beehives. They make me want to spin wool. Want to pour a glass of whiskey? Your armpits dripping their honey, their heat, their inexhaustible love making dark. Your arms are the arms of nations. They hail me like a cab. I am bright yellow for them. I'm always thinking about them, resting at your side or high in the air when I'm pulling off your shirt. Your arms of blue and ice with the blood running through them, close enough to your shoulders to make your shoulders believe in God. Your shoulders make me want to raise an army and burn down the embassy. They sing to each other underneath their turquoise slope neck blouse. They are each a separate bowl of rice steaming and covered in soy sauce. Your neck is a skyscraper of erotic adult videos, a swan and a ballet and a throaty elevator made of light. Your neck is a scrim of wet silk that guide the dead into the hours of heaven. It makes me want to die. Your mouth, which is the mouth of everything we're saying, it's abalone and coral reef. Your mouth, which opens like the legs of astronauts who disconnect their safety lines and ride their stars into the billion and one voting districts of the Milky Way. Darling, you're my president. I want to get this right. Thank you.